Vegas Bad Boys Podcast presents Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels here, and today I am joined by two special guests. First, the author of a new book, Mr. Vinnie Barry, and that book is Lance by Chance, Wrestling as a Von Erich, the story of Mr. Lance Von Erich. Lance, how are you doing today, brother?
I'm doing very good. I'm talking to you from sunny Mexico.
You know, is it true the margaritas just never stop flowing down that way?
Well, if you want them to, yeah, that's for sure.
You know, what I found fascinating about your story is that most wrestling fans don't understand that there was more to your life than just being Lance Von Erich for a period of time in WCCW. You know, when you first got approached by David Manning, you were a real estate agent. You were doing fairly well. If you didn't get that initial approach, what would you have been doing, man?
I actually, you know, I've thought about that many times. I really don't know.
Yeah,
I sure wouldn't have traveled the world. I wouldn't be living between Mexico and South Africa. But yeah, I have no idea, to tell you the truth.
Was it for you just kind of a... As a person, do you kind of just kind of go with the flow of life? Because you get approached and within 2 weeks, you're, you know, getting trained and, you know, being, you know, fast path to becoming a Von Erich. Has it always just kind of been like, hey, if I don't do it now, if I don't try whatever is put in front of me, that maybe I'll never have that chance again?
No, I think that I was purely motivated by money. I was told that I could make a lot of money, and you know, so I was kind of, that's how I actually, they kind of hooked me into the wrestling.
Yeah,
you know, it didn't turn out that way, but until afterwards, but you know, it's given me a lot of opportunities that I wouldn't have if I had stayed in Dallas. I probably would have never left Dallas.
Sure. Sure. With that, you know, when you were in Portland, you were kind of warned about the potential of what Fritz would do in terms of, you know, not getting a push if you're not part of his family. Did you ever think about the idea of if you stayed in Portland and you know, followed for a couple years, you know, developed a little more of a following and a little more of the in-ring ability, would you have taken the opportunity if the WWF had come calling at that time?
Well, matter of fact, that's what Don Owen had actually said. He said, listen, you don't need to go anywhere else. You need to stay here for a couple of years, and, you know, we're giving a good push. And obviously he wanted me to stay there because, you know, I was making him money, and he was actually, you know, taking the time to have me trained.
Yeah.
But in reality, that's probably what I should have done.
Well, you know, it's interesting in that thought and aspect of when you went down to Dallas and you get that popularity of becoming a Von Erich, it's almost a natural fit that, you know, you were introduced, fans bought into it, as they should. And then, as you decided down the road that you didn't want to do this anymore because Fritz had you working so much for so little, did you ever look at it at the fact that Fritz, they outed you on TV because Fritz was afraid of you going to the WWF and using the Von Erich name? And having Vince just bury you just to bury the Von Erichs?
Of course. I mean, that's why, I'm sure that's why they, you know, actually gone on television and gave away, you know, the storyline. I'm sure.
And is
it, nothing else makes sense.
Well, is it weird in a sense too, or maybe I shouldn't even say weird. I should say in kind of an odd poetic way that by doing so, that was the start of the unravel of WCCW, because the fans now couldn't trust, you know, what they were being told by the Von Erichs, who were considered by, I think, most fans as part of, you know, Texas family. But at the same time, what's interesting is that for years and years and years, Vince McMahon has gotten away with fans identifying the idea that Vince buries wrestlers who are about to be out of their contract and about to go on to be a free agent, go do something else. Is it that mentality that the Von Erichs meant so much in Texas that, you know, it wasn't just accepted that, hey, wrestling is based around characters, that the family is so beloved that this started, you know, being the backlash and ultimately ended up, you know, getting them out of the business?
No, I don't. Actually, in reality, I think that, number one, losing so many Von Erichs, I think it had very little to do with any of that.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, them going on, you know, on television and telling them I wasn't a Von Erich. I think their undoing was losing all the Von Erichs. Well, they lost another one, me as well, but losing all the Von Erichs. And also for the Fritz not wanting to go into other territories. He could have been what Vince McMahon was.
Yeah.
Especially on the, you know, on the European and on the Middle Eastern circuit. I mean, you know, that General 39 was had a huge following. So I think that had more to do with it than, you know, what had happened with him actually disclosing me as not being a Von Erich.
You know, when you were down there and you got to know Kerry Von Erich fairly well in the book, you know, it's recalled how you guys would go out with your significant others and, you know, have a date night out with the women. Do you think that Kerry got along with you because of the sense that Kerry kind of looked at you and was happy to see that you, even though you had the Von Erich name, at any point, you didn't have to be a Von Erich anymore? And maybe Kerry was, you know, in that mindset of, wouldn't it have been nice not to have to have that burden totally on his shoulders?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure that he actually was glad that he didn't have to make every show. You know, they didn't. They had a hard time making the shows. You know, a lot of times it just wouldn't show up. And, you know, and it was a grueling, you know, schedule. I'm sure that he was happy to have, you know, somebody to help with that. And a lot of times I actually worked, you know, twice a day. So that gave him some time off.
You know,
gave them both some time.
When you were being worked at your hardest, for you, what was it that kept you sane during that time period? Because I couldn't imagine having to do the circuit that you had to do and for, you know, as little of a payoff as it essentially was in the big picture. What was it that kept you motivated and kept you going until you finally had enough?
Well, a couple of things. The hope that one day we would start making some money, number one. Number two, probably alcohol and drugs helped a little bit.
Sure. You know, speaking of that, you mentioned alcohol. Did you ever get a chance to drink with Ric Flair?
A couple of times. And I couldn't
keep up with him. And speaking of guys like that, is it easier when you're, you know, just as fresh as you were, you know, a couple years in, is it easier when you have someone like that who can basically just call and, you know, you trust them fully. Does it help that those guys during that time would come in and you'd be able to work them and you'd look like $1 million and they'd end up looking like $1 million as well?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, Ric Flair was a, especially Ric Flair, he was a king of doing that. You know, he could take anybody and, you know, he would just say before the match, he'd say, listen, just listen to me, you'll be good. And it's true. You know, he just knew how to, you know, how to call a match and how to make you feel comfortable. There's certain people that just, you know, they're able to do that. And it's, you know, the people that have been in the business a long time. I remember when I first started in Portland, I used to, you know, wrestle with Jerry Gray, and we'd have excellent matches. You know, he was a mid-card guy. You know, I don't think he ever got a real big push, but, you know, we'd go out and we'd have just some fantastic matches. And for some of the heels, you know, his babyface match, for some of the heels, you know, at that time, like Ed Wiskowski, you know, he was so afraid of getting hurt.
I'm glad you brought up Jerry Gray. Jerry is a friend of the show's, and Jerry over the last couple years has been going through stage 4 cancer.
Stage 4 colon cancer. Yeah.
Yeah. Are there? You know, I just talked to him recently. You know, he's doing as good as he could be doing, but he's. Does have a GoFundMe out there, so people listening, please check out Jerry Gray's GoFundMe. Is there any other stories, you know, outside of what's in the book? And I want people to read the book. I don't want to give away some of those great little gems in there. But is there anything else that sticks out with Jerry? Because you know that he was just a great, great ribber with the guys.
Yeah, he was a great guy. We had a lot of... You know, a lot of good stories. I mean, I remember we were wrestling with a guy named Steve Pardee, and I don't know if you know who he is or not. I'm sure that he's changed his name a couple of times, but he was in Portland with us, and sometime we were at a hotel in, I don't know, Salem, I think it was, or Eugene, I guess, and Steve came in and he had little dots all over his back, and we couldn't figure out what the little dots were from, and he wouldn't really tell us. And one of the girls that was kind of a ringer, I said, was had high heels and she'd walked all over, and he must have 200 holes in his back. And Jerry Gray and myself actually fell down, and a couple other people just fell down laughing. You know, we just had a lot of little incidents like that. It was pretty funny.
You know, you worked with some great guys up there in Portland, and I know you talked a little bit about Bobby Jaggers in the book. You know, Bobby was a Vietnam vet, and he was in the Tet Offensive. Was it really fascinating to get to travel? You know, a lot of times now, let's face it, guys are confined to their phones or to their video game systems, and you don't really get, you know, really a sense of camaraderie or a sense of what people have been through. Was it important to you to kind of take in everyone's personalities and everyone else's experiences to kind of help you, you know, understand what everyone else was going through?
I never thought about that, about how, and also like raising kids today, you know, you don't really have to do a whole lot and sit in front of an iPad. So I'm guessing it's the same way with, you know, watching movies the whole way on a trip going somewhere. But it was kind of interesting. It was pretty funny because, you know, we entertained each other. I had a good time for them, and you know, we used to put all the baby faces in there. I didn't pay for the gas; they all paid for the gas, and you know, just all sorts of things happened at a good time for them. I mean, it was pretty interesting. I mean, it's more like didn't help me get through anything. It just kept excusing me. It was just nonstop laughing, at least in Oregon.
You know, when you finished up with WCCW, you end up making your way to South Africa, and friend of the show, PJ Black, his dad, Paul Lloyd, was the Pink Panther, had the promotion down there. And, you know, PJ, I reached out to him, and he said that you're the man. And he said to ask you about Sun City and Wild Coast Sun Trips. Does that ring a bell?
Well, of course. We, you know, we used to go down there and wrestle, and we pulled some really big houses. I actually, funny enough, I made a lot more money in South Africa than I did in Dallas.
Sure.
Kind of funny.
And
had a lot better time wrestling there, too.
You know, and in reading the book, one of the things I think you made a really good point of is that you didn't have to do as much of the loop and circuit type thing you have to do back then in, you know, in the territories. How receptive were the fans to you in, you know, obviously in the setting, that's one thing, but when you were just walking around, you know, town, just, you know, doing what you did. And of course you had a popular gym, you know, going there, did people come up to you and look at you with admiration in South America?
Well, remember, I was doing television and commercials there as well, but it wasn't the same. I mean, Von Erichs, no doubt, you know, I couldn't go anywhere, go out to eat and not be, you know, from the time I sat down until the time I got up, had people just one after another, like, wanted to sign their autograph, but South Africa people are much more reserved. You know, it's weird, yeah. Kind of where different places you are, different people. You know, their celebrities are treated differently as well.
Sure.
You know, like in Israel, they came like climbing over tables as well, but in South Africa, it's more of a reserved culture, just like the UK.
And there are some fabulous stories in the book, including the craziness of riding bikes in Africa, which is amazing. And again, I don't want to give too much away. I want people to go out and read the book because it's well worth the time. But
look, you know, I was on a plane that got hijacked. I was on a train that got bombed. I rode my bicycle from Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, all the way up to the Congo, where, you know, you see little four-year-olds with machine guns. So, you know, it's much more than just wrestling. It's also about, you know, the story about between the wrestling. You know, yeah. Wrestling the matches and the Von Erichs, but it's also about the journey that I went through, you know, on the way.
You know, one of the things...
I was smuggling guns. I was, smuggling from the States to South Africa. I was doing a lot of things.
And you know, there's some great stories in there about all that stuff. It's amazing. You know, the train in India it just blew my mind. You know, one of the things, though, you transitioned into, as well as commercials, you did some acting. What was it like working with William Levy, who, for me, I knew him from Skate Town USA, but you worked on Hellgate. What was the experience like for you? Was it just a lot of downtime? Because, you know, you worked on that film for a little bit, right?
Yeah, for like 3 months. I made actually more money than any of them because I got paid per day, and we had 3 months of rain, and we couldn't finish the movie. Bill and I became really, really, really good friends.
Wow.
You know, he moved to South Africa for a little over a year, and then I after he left, I went to visit him. He lived in Hollywood, right on between Hollywood and Beverly Hills, like the street, right? One side is Hollywood, the other side is Beverly Hills, and I used to go visit him quite often.
Sure, sure. Yeah, those were my old stomping grounds, too, for about 20 years, the L.A. area. One of the coolest things I really, found and respected you for is that you've been able to do so much of, one thing and then another thing and then another thing. And you're always coming out what seems to be in, a better experience for you. You're always going forward, never seem to be going back. With what you're doing now and being able to do stuff in the resort industry, is this something that ultimately you think that everything led you to this point of your life and where you're, being able to kind of tell your story and your history, and also you have a job that you, are enjoying, and you get to see some of the best, places on Earth.
Look, it's weird how things turn out because, if South Africa hadn't had the end of the apartheid and the new government coming, I'm not that clear who runs the government, just run it better than what it was, yeah. Or at least it's good. And it didn't happen, and I knew it was time to, move, at least get out of business that I was in. And, then I moved to Mexico. I moved to Mexico to San Martin, to San Lucia, to Dominican Republic, back over here to Mexico. So it's interesting. If the government hadn't changed hands, and it's always something that's happened that takes you in a different way. And if I'd still be full-time in South Africa and still owning gyms, if the government hadn't changed hands.
Sure.
And, I could never imagine living in the States again. Even though I like the States and like the COVID, but, just watching all the crazy stuff that's happening right now, I'm saying, wow, I'm over here.
Yeah, I can say that I'm a little bit envious. just wrapping up here. I don't want to keep you too long, but do you think that when you look at having come into the situation that you did in the in Texas, in WCCW, do you think if you were, let's say, a little more seasoned, let's say that, you had been training beforehand, maybe spent 2 or 3 or 4 years in the business before you arrived in Texas or, was discovered as someone who could be a Von Erich, do you think that experience would have been a little bit different for you? Do you think you might have not even taken that opportunity if it was presented to you, if you knew more about how things were done?
Obviously, if I had been a little more seasoned, especially on the interview side, I think that I would have been much more happy, at least.
Sure.
And I think that one of the things that the Von Erichs didn't understand, and Kevin actually wrote me an email that I didn't want to read, but then he actually asked me to read it because he said he would never, because he kind of, I never wrote the book. I never had written a book to trash them, and, I do know that Kevin had done, I believe he felt that I'd betrayed them. I think that Fritz thought he was giving me such a great, they were doing me such a great favor to make me a Von Erich. But it's like anything. If the money's not commensurate with the job,
yeah.
And no matter how much fame you have, if money's not commensurate with the job, it's just not worth doing.
Yeah.
It took a toll on my health, my body for sure. I went from you know, or after I left, about 2 years after I left, I got my body back better than Terry's.
Yeah.
You know, and Terry had a great body. But, you know, I just because I was, you know, working all the time, I wasn't making money, and, you know, it was very difficult. So to answer your question, I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't have. If I'd been enough more season, maybe I would have gone straight to, you know, the WWF.
And
maybe
if you did theoretically go to the WWF, and obviously Vince would have, you know, come up with some kind of character for you, if you had a choice, what would have been a wrestling persona that you would have done either in the WWF or, you know, outside, let's say after, you know, in the States here, after WCCW, is there anything that would appeal to you in terms of who you would have been?
You mean what character I would have wanted?
Yeah, like...
I don't understand.
Yeah, would you have seen yourself as, let's say, you know, because Vince was, you know, big on assigning, you know, your... this type of your you know, an Irish guy who loves, you know, pots of gold. You know, he came up with weird stuff sometimes. But did you see yourself as being some other type of persona?
No, I guess I'd want a tag team with Ultimate Warrior. I don't know.
It would have been cool to see you and a Warrior together. That would have been interesting. Final question for you, and then we'll let you take a siesta. Rocky IV, if you did get the opportunity to audition for it, what would have your Russian accent have been?
I don't know, but I would say it would be more like Woodland. I don't know. Hey, listen, tell your fans please help out Jerry Gray. He needs the help. Not a better guy in the world. He's, you know, I know he's struggling.
Yeah, it's please go to GoFundMe. Anyone listening, please go to GoFundMe. You can look up Jerry Gray's GoFundMe page. You know, there's a lot to the story, so you can read it there and see exactly what he's been going through. But if you talk about people who are just absolute fighters, man, there isn't anyone more I can think of than is, you know, really just a fighter, because I don't know if I could persevere through what he's had to go through. And I appreciate you saying that, Lance, because I know that Jerry would absolutely just, you know, you could see him beaming just, you know, knowing that you're passing along those words as well. And,
he was having to take care of his mother there at Alzheimer's, so can you imagine?
Yeah.
So I don't know if she's still, you know, alive or not, but I know that for a while it was really difficult for him.
Yeah.
You know, had to take care of himself, much less have to take care of a mom, so he's a better man than I am. Hey, and listen, I just want to say that I got to give Vinny a lot of credit, because he had written a book that many other people had actually asked him to write. I mean, he's the only one that approached me that I wanted to write a book with, and he did a great job. I didn't want to read the book. You know, I don't know why. There's a lot of bad memories, and he keeps asking me questions about the book. And anyway, he'd ask me if I read it, and I'm like, yeah. But I didn't know the answer. So one day I sat down and I read the book from start to finish. And actually, I was like, wow, what a great job. And so I'm going to let you go, but I'm going to let you, talk to Vinny about what got him to do this, but he did a great job. Truly, he's got a great career ahead of him.
Absolutely, Lance.
Matt, I appreciate you having me on, and I hope everyone reads the book.
I appreciate you taking your time, man, and one of these days I'll hopefully get my butt out of this country and catch up with you on an island, and we can talk stories about.
Well, I'm in Baja, Mexico, so if you're coming through a little town called Loreto, look me up. They all know me here.
You got it, brother. Everyone, that was Lance Von Erich, and take care of yourself, man.
Okay, Vinny?
Yes, sir.
See you later.
All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Later.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Bye. Bye, Matt.
Bye, Lance. All right, so now we get to talk a little bit with Mr. Vinny Barry. Vinny, how are you doing after listening to Lance and I talk there for a little bit?
Oh, I always enjoy listening to his stories. They never get, you know, they just never get old for me.
It's, you know, as he was saying there in the end, you know, about not wanting to read the book and then, you know, sitting down and just kind of just reading, just going through it. I think one of the biggest compliments that anyone can give an author is the fact that when you sit down and you start turning the pages to a book, you start within the first couple pages of this book hearing Lance's voice. And everything that is written comes from a perspective of relatability, that you don't have to be a wrestling fan, you know, hardcore wrestling fan. Maybe you know a little bit about the Von Erich story. Maybe you know a little bit about Lance's story. But everything in the book comes from a perspective that seems like you're just sitting down and just talking to Lance. And I found that it's just so easy. Like you said, you just read from the beginning until the end. One, you know, swift read. And you want more.
Yeah, you know what? I'll just say this. I was very fortunate to have some really good writers. And I had an English teacher and just people who would kind of challenge me, you know, and just like, you know, kind of stretch me a little bit and just try to get me to be very descriptive, to ask him a lot of questions of, you know, look, anybody can describe something, right? But when you ask him, well, how did it make you feel?
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. I mean, that everybody feels, right? So that was trying to get those emotions out on paper. You know, a friend of mine said yesterday, he read the book, and he said, you got the non-wrestling fan to care about this guy.
Yeah.
Yep. And to me, that's awesome, right? I mean, you know, I would love to be able to write something like this all the time, right? I mean,
sure.
I'm very proud of this piece of work, but, you know, it was one of those things that I, you know, worked on and invested and put in the time and the research. And, you know, him going back to saying that, you know, like, I'd be like, it got to the point where I felt like the project was going on a little longer than it needed to be. I mean, you know, maybe because of COVID, I'd still be working on it, right? You know, because that really helped me kind of put it on the fast track. But, you know, there was a lot of times where I felt like, you know, he wasn't moving fast enough for me. And I'd say, hey, what do you think about this and that? Or what do you think about this part? Or he goes, oh, I'll get back to you. And I think I called him out and said, you haven't read it yet. And, you know what? I never thought that it would be difficult for him. But then when you think about it, you know, there was a lot of stuff with him and his mother, you know, you know, obviously there was some issues with that, you know, with that relationship to a degree. And then, of course, he wasn't happy wrestling in Dallas. And then, of course, you know, he made a lot of mistakes and he had failed marriages. And so, you know, I guess we're kind of digging up some old wounds, you know?
Yeah. What was it about Lance that made you interested in writing his story? Because like you said, other people had approached him in the past. What was it that got you hooked on Lance Von Erich? Was it, you know, from watching WCCW? And then how did you eventually, years later, get the opportunity to write the book?
Well, I've always been curious of what happened, you know, growing up in the Dallas area, watching the stuff on television, seeing what Fritz did, and then years later going back online and seeing Lance and just wondering what all happened there.
Right.
You know, and then I started my website and in 2017 and wrestling website. And, you know, he came up a couple times when I would talk to the world-class guys, you know, Lance Von Erich's name would be mentioned. And after a couple conversations with James Beard, he told me how to get in touch with him. I reached out to Lance. Lance was very receptive, gave me his number right away, and I called him the next day and told him I wanted to write a story about him. And he wasn't opposed to it, but he just didn't really quite understand why I wanted to do it.
Sure.
I'll say this. We're living in a world where, you know, and I'm glad this is happening, but it's like, you know, because, you know, a lot of our wrestling legends are leaving us, right?
Sure.
You know, they're getting old and they're passing away. And there's a lot of books being written, and you can, you know, I'm sure you've seen within the last 10 years, there's quite the array of wrestling stories out there, and probably just about anybody you can think of may have a book. There's very few wrestlers that really tickle that fancy for me to want to write about.
Sure.
But this is one.
Did you
this guy, Lance Von Erich? I mean, you know, and I would tell him all the time. I said, if I only get to write about one wrestler, you know, it'll be you. You know, my next book is going to be a compilation of short stories. It's not even going to be an autobiography.
That sounds very intriguing. I like that idea.
It's going to be wrestling, of course.
Sure. But I love that idea of, you know, a compilation of stories. Let me ask you, speaking of stories, what was the thing that you got to in all the conversations and all the memories? What was the thing or things that got to you, you know, that you discovered that you would have never have even thought that would have crossed your mind when you first got into the project?
There is a lot, man. There really is a lot. The main thing that really baffled me I think me and you talked about this. I thought that he was already an established wrestler, you know?
Right.
I was under the impression that he was an established wrestler. And when he told me that, you know, Fritz pretty much created him from the ground up, I kind of had to ask him, like, hey, wait a second. Can you explain that to me again? Because it was so foreign to what I've been told all these years, right? So that was one. I had no idea that he wrestled for 10 years. Everybody was pretty much under under the impression that, you know, after World Class and after that short little stint in Wild West Wrestling, Ken Mantell's promotion,
right,
that he was pretty much done with wrestling. You know, when I was promoting the book, a lot of people would post online things like, oh, what a promising career cut short. And I'm like, cut short? It was like 10 or 11 years. What are you talking about? but again, a lot of people don't know what happened.
Right.
You know, overseas. And, you know, that's the way I like the book. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't want to read the book because it's about Lance and it's not about the Von Erichs and all, you know, I don't like Lance and all this stuff. And, you know, if you pick the book up and read the book, I really think you're going to enjoy the book.
Yeah.
I just can't, you know, I mean, I just, it's just, you know, I've had so many people come to me and their mind has been changed because they gave it a chance, you know?
Sure. Sure. And I think that's one of the most important things that, you know, anyone listening who is thinking, well, why would I want to invest my time and money into this guy's story because he was a phony Von Erich? And, you know, and first of all, I think that, you know, anyone who still has that thought in their mind is, you know, you're living in the past, you're holding a grudge that doesn't need to be held, especially now that so much of wrestling has been exposed over the years. And to look at his story, you also kind of see how the idea of, you know, like you said, Fritz created the character from the ground up. He was the Dr. Frankenstein behind the Frankenstein monster. And essentially, you know, when the monster, you know, got to the point where he wanted out, you know, then Dr. Frankenstein kills the monster by burying him on TV. And fans continued to have that opinion of him being a phony for, you know, 35 years now. And it's just not that simple. And if you read the book and you read the stories, you understand that, man, there was so much more to his life than that snippet that, you know, a guy like me, you know, might remember from being 10 years old or so and going, you know, whatever happened to Lance Von Erich? You know, and initially too, who is Lance Von Erich? He's a cousin, you know, it's just, there's so much more to it than just the simplicity of, you know, his being in WCCW and then being done with WCCW. And I think that's one of the things you get at wonderfully is that you present a complete picture of a human being, not just a character that, you know, fans just continue to like to, you know, put down.
Well, I think what the book does and what we capture well, and I couldn't have done it without him. He was honest.
Yeah.
He was very, you know, got vulnerable, you know, he's very transparent in this book. I don't know if I would have been that transparent. I mean, maybe to him or my, you know, closest friends and stuff like that,
sure,
you know, or one-on-one conversation, you know, but to put it in a book?
Yeah.
I don't know. I that's why it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why it works, because who can't relate with someone who's flawed?
Yeah. And I'm glad you,
we're all caught.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, you know, in that manner, because one of the things that if you read the book, you'll see that vulnerability that Vinny's talking about because of the fact that there's stories in there regarding
you know, him being on the road and being in Portland and newly married before he went up there. And now here is every, you know, young lady in the Portland area very available to him and to a lot of the other wrestlers. You know, there's stories about that. There's stories about the fact that there's no punches pulled when it comes to the fact that steroids are mentioned. And, you know, various things fueled by different drugs and alcohol, by, you know, the circumstances that these guys lived in. And I think that we also tend to forget that the territory days were not anything near what I think most wrestling fans think of today. Because now all these guys, they get on a jet, they fly to a hotel, you know, they're put up, you know, they might make some traveling through cars, you know, if the cities are close. But nothing like these guys had to go through and had to persevere through.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, and right now, you know, due to COVID, I don't think anybody's really traveling, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Unless you've got, I mean, because I know a lot of those guys live in Florida, but not everybody lives in Florida, so I'm sure they're traveling once a week. They're not traveling every day.
Yeah.
You know, they're traveling, you know, there was a time that they were traveling, you know, throughout the week or whatever, 4 days a week. But they're not doing that because they're wrestling in one place. So, you know, yeah, it was different. And especially, you know, when you get to Texas.
Yeah.
Texas is such a big state.
Yeah.
There's a friend of mine was in, he lives in New York, and, I didn't know he was in Austin, but I texted him and he said, "Hey, I'm in Austin." And I said, "Oh, really? Oh, you're right down the road from me." Well, it's 6 hours away from where I live to Austin, right? And it's a straight shot. But, you know, I live on the bottom
right
of the state of Texas. Austin's in the middle of Texas. My brother lives at the top of Texas. It takes me a good 10 hours to go see my brother.
Yeah.
Well, to put that in perspective, it's just as big from east to west.
Yeah.
So, you know, Texas is a big state. It makes for a long drive. And
yeah,
when you're tired, you're driving at night, it's even worse. And I would like to say this, Matt, and you know, this is just, there was a person on Facebook that's been kind of trolling me the last couple of days because, look, no one's going to promote my book except me.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of podcasts who are willing to put me on their show. And you know what? I really do appreciate it. And I share them. I share them in just about every single group I'm in. And it's time consuming. But I share. If I don't have problems with the link, I share. Well, I've been being told the last couple of days, and what's that old saying? If you argue with an idiot, before you know it, it's hard to find, you know, it's hard to decipher who the idiot is.
Yeah.
It's kind of getting to that point. But the fact of the matter is that he's saying things like, oh, he sucks. He wasn't a good wrestler. He was terrible. Dude, because he wasn't a wrestler, bro.
Yeah.
And he was wrestling next to Kevin and Kerry, who probably been doing it all their life.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you take anybody that isn't polished, and I'll say this. I watch a lot of Lance. I watch a ton of Lance, you know, for this book, you know, because I rate a lot of the matches in the book. As you see, there's a lot of detail of the matches in the book.
Yep.
Well, his matches are not that bad. When you understand that
he was pretty much trained on the job. Yeah. When you understand that here is a guy that would have never been a wrestler, man, it never even crossed his mind. You know, it's like, it just would have never happened, you know? I mean, I have more, the chances of me becoming a dinosaur are better than him ever becoming a wrestler, right? Because he just wouldn't have.
Yeah.
You know, and so my point is that, you know, give him some credit, man. There's some, hey, trust me, there's some worse wrestlers than Lance Von Erich. Matter of fact, Mike was not that good of a wrestler.
Right.
You know, and I liked Mike. I thought he was a super nice guy, but he didn't want to wrestle.
Yeah.
And there's you know, if you understand that, there's no passion there. Who's going to have passion doing something they don't want to do? And he said it very well just a few minutes ago. I was motivated by money. Well, I think he's motivated by money in a lot of things.
Sure. You know? Yeah.
So, read the book and you'll understand that.
Yeah. And I think the other, you know, think about The Ultimate Warrior is a great example. If you watch his matches, he has no technical ability. He, you know, it's all done really, you know, he looks best when he's going against guys against like a Randy Savage or a Rick Rude, because those guys made him look good. And that's the fascinating thing, is that for all these people who crap all over Lance Von Erich, the truth is, like you said, if you look at the matches, he did exactly what he was asked to do. And if you were around at that time, you were a fan of his because you bought into what you were watching, which is exactly what any type of entertainment should do. You know, he did his job, and he did it well. And to give him credit, when he walked away from it, he walked away from it because if you look at the circumstances, it was not worth what you had to do in terms of the travel and in terms of the wear on your body to what he had basically, you know, been promised or told, you know, at the beginning. It's like all of a sudden, you know, Fritz, you know, needs him to do more shots and, you know, needs him to start carrying a torch and doing this and do that and never seeing anything more for the effort that he was putting in. And I think that is so important because instead of rewriting history and trying to make it where, well, of course, the Von Erichs were absolutely right here. The truth of the matter is that there's a second perspective, and it's his, and it's firsthand, look into his life and his state of mind and all the successes and failures he's had throughout his life. And I think that that is what captures the essence of who he is. And that's what makes the book just so wonderful to read, because a lot of people now, it's so easy to just jump on a computer and then just spew out your opinions and have no basis for them. You know, have no concrete, solid knowledge of what you're talking about. And at least if you read the book, then you have a choice of what you think in terms of, you know, was it Lance or was it the circumstances he was given to be this person? Hell, I think one of the first things that people probably don't even know is that his name wasn't Lance.
Right. It was Kevin.
Yeah. And apparently,
but he kept the name. But he, you know, just explained to the fans that he kept the name Lance only because everyone always called him that, and plus he was really happy with his name Kevin. You know, the name his parents gave him. So
yeah,
and he just kind of, that was one thing that he kept. You know.
And it's, you know, and it's, again, it's a cool thing to kind of read about these circumstances and situations that led to this, that, and the other, because you lay them out in the book, and he doesn't hold back, like you said. It is very honest. It is not a biography that is written in the typical wrestling biography where it's, you know, just, well, when I did this match, it was, you know, really an honor working with so-and-so, you know, and then moving on to, when I did this match, it was an honor working with so-and-so. You know, this is a true perspective of stories that you usually don't get to hear from, you know, from the heart of someone who lived through the days of wrestling that were the end of the territories. And like you said, you know, you're starting to see a lot of, you know, people from that era, they're starting to pass away. And it's very important to have an honest perspective of their stories, because if we don't, then it just becomes, you know, at the mercy of people who like to just bring up certain names in the history of wrestling just to rag on them and just to make it look like you're a big shot, you're smarter because, you know, you think you know the truth. Well, here is the truth, and you can get it by reading Lance by Chance, Wrestling as a Von Erich. Vinny, where can people purchase the book, and where can people follow you?
You can get the book at lancebychance.com. We do have autographed copies there. If you want an autographed copy, that's the only place where you can get it, lancebychance.com. You can get the book. The book is now available on Amazon, and there's a digital copy available. If you have listeners in other countries, you know, it's available in Canada, United Kingdom, Italy, France, Germany, Spain, the Netherlands, France, you know, and then in the places where I didn't mention, you can get the digital. So it's basically available, you know, almost all over the world. And, you know, that's, you know, that just happened this past week. So that was a process, but, you know, that was something that needed to be done. And I want the fans in other countries to be able to read it. You can go to LanceByChance.com. You can email me at WrestlevilleUSA@gmail.com. I am on Facebook at Vincent Berry. I'm on Twitter as Vinny Berry. And please visit my website, WrestleVille.com, where we write stories about wrestlers. And probably within a month, we're going to have a podcast. So we're doing things. And the second book is probably halfway done. I'm planning. I would like to publish it before the end of the year. So that's my goal.
Excellent. And, you know, just so listeners know, you know, Vinny's doing this out of his love of wrestling. It's not that he's a contracted author who is, you know, put together with a personality to help write their biography or autobiography. This is all done out of, you know, Vinny's time and his money. And, you know, it's a passion project, writing these stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And a little bit of my insanity too, Matt. but you know, I'll say this. Everybody has their thing, right? And this is my thing. And you know what? It's taken me a while to kind of find my my niche, you know, my place, you know. For about 5 years, I wrote for boxing and MMA, and I've always wanted to write a book, and it just never happened. And I guess not that it never happened, I just never really, I don't know, maybe followed through.
Sure.
But, you know, now that I have followed through, I do understand why people don't. you know, what I've know and what I've learned from other writers is that, you know, you gotta kind of, you know, be working on one project when you're working on another project. And, you know, like I said, I at this time I didn't have an autobiography to do, and I didn't know if I wanted to do that. I wanted to do a book of short stories for quite some time, and I didn't know if it was going to be wrestling. And then I realized that I had more material than I thought I did, and I was just going to go ahead and do it. So that's going to be my next book. And my third book, I'm probably going to do a autobiography. I have somebody in mind. I'm not going to mention it on the air because it's not set in stone and it could change, but it is someone who piques my interest, someone who I would enjoy working with. So.
Well, I love it. Again, all the listeners, please, if you know, have the means and are, you know, looking for a good story, please check out Lance by Chance. Again, too, you don't have to be a wrestling fan. That's one of the good things that the book is written to explain certain wrestling terminology, so that if you have, you know, family or friends who might enjoy a good story but might not necessarily know a lot about wrestling, this is a great way to get them acclimated into not only wrestling, but an important part of the history of wrestling, and just a great life story in Lance Von Erich's story. And again, follow Vinny and check out his work at the WrestleVille website. And once again, Vinny, thanks for joining me. Shout out to Lance again for joining us. And we'll be talking to you out there in the listener land very soon again. And everyone, take care until next time.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.